spend the first 3 or 4 weeks talking about what God has done, how great God is, and focusing on Him and the reasons why we should devote our lives to Him, because He is great and He's awesome, and all the things that He's done, and the way that He's given His grace, His love, His mercy to us when we didn't deserve it. And then we kind of turned and we started looking at ourselves and seeing how selfish we really are, and how difficult it is for us as a people to focus on God, because we have such a difficult time, or we have such an easy time focusing only on ourselves. And then we got to a point to where the question was, what am I giving to God? What does God want from me? And one of the chapters, the title was, Giving God the Leftovers. And that chapter really sort of changed my way of thinking about a lot of things. Is that really what I do? I live my life and I do the things that I want to do. I do the things that I have to do in this life to survive. And then I give God whatever's at the end, whatever's left over. Here, God, take this. And, you know, it's a very small, and it's sort of, you know, not that great, but I'll just give it to you and you can take it as you want. And we've come to the conclusion through studying the book and through our discussion and through our Bible study that, you know, that's not what God wants from us. God wants all of us. He wants the best that we have to offer. And so therein lies the challenge for us, is putting God first, putting what He wants first, and trying to figure out how I can live and sacrifice the things that God desires for me, and put myself on the back, put myself in the background. And it's been a very challenging thought. And the thing about it is, it applies to every aspect. It applies to our worship. It applies to our service. It applies to our daily living. It applies to our finances. It applies to how we deal with others. It encompasses every part. When God said that He wants us to love Him with all of our heart, with our soul, with our mind, and our strength, I think that's what He's talking about. With every part of our life. I can't hold anything back. I have to give it all to Him. And so we discovered, I discovered in my own life that I think that there was this middle ground. I'm not a bad person, and I do give more than most. But I'm not where I need to be. So I'm sort of stuck in this rut, in this middle ground of playing it safe in my life, spiritually speaking. And how do I step from playing it safe into making that next step to maybe taking some risks? Maybe stepping out on faith and not depending all on myself, but depending on God. Because one of the things we discussed several times is this: it's a process. It's not anything that's going to happen overnight. The chapter that Chris talked about last week was called A Profile of the Obsessed. And it's talking about how we have to be like Jesus. And if you look at Jesus, you see how radical a life He lived. He and His disciples and those that followed Him, those early Christians in Jerusalem, what a radical life they lived. They were obsessed with one thing. They were consumed with one thing, and that was their passion for serving God. Jesus, you know, He had so many other things that He could have involved Himself with in this life, but He chose to involve Himself only with the service to God. Now, He had those that He loved. He had friends. He had a life, an enjoyable life, I'm assuming. But yet it was all centered around God and His love. And so the chapter today is called Who Really Lives That Way? Who Really Lives That Way? And in this chapter, and I'm not really going to go through this chapter, he talks about some personal people in his own life, or some people that he is aware of in his own life that have influenced him. People who stepped outside of that middle ground, who took it a step further. He talks about some people who went to foreign countries, sold everything they had and went to foreign countries and opened an orphanage. Talks about people who did extraordinary things, and then he even talks about some people who just did the very simple things. It talks about a family who they made it their tradition every Christmas that on Christmas morning they would get up and they would go down to a homeless shelter and they would serve. And the kids, instead of getting presents, they would make a meal together, and they would go and they would serve that meal to people who were in need. Just a varying group, and if you read the book, I mean, there is some good stuff in there. But it got me to thinking about, first of all, it got me to thinking about the people talked about in Hebrews chapter 11. We talked about people who stepped outside the box, who think a little more radically than most people. In Hebrews chapter 11, everybody knows that chapter as the chapter of faith, talks about a lot of people who did that. Talks about Abraham and Noah and Isaac and all these people who did something extraordinary. They stepped outside the box and they did what God asked them to do, not knowing what was going to happen, not knowing the result. And it talks about how because they did that, God followed through on His promise. He promised them a certain thing would happen, and they each could have said, "That makes no sense, God." Has anybody ever been there in your life? Every day? That makes no sense, God. Here, I'm trying to live for You. I'm trying to do the things, and You throw this at me? You know, I don't understand. I don't get it. I don't understand where you want me to go here. These people said, "Well, but I'm going to go anyway. I'm going to step out, move to this certain place, or go kill your son, or build a boat," or all the things that he talks about in this chapter are things that didn't make any sense at face value. But yet, they decided they were going to step out in faith. Then it talks on further. It talks about Rahab, and it talks about Barak. It talks about all these different people. And the thing that stands out about these people is they were not super people. They were ordinary, normal people just like me and you. They didn't have superpowers. They didn't have all these. They were just normal people who made mistakes, who lived lives that sometimes weren't pleasing to God, but yet God blessed them because of their faith. They stepped outside of their comfort zone and they followed God to a T. And God bless them. And then it talks about at the end, and it doesn't even name these people. But it says, in verse 35, women received back their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured and refused to be released, so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskin and goatskin, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and in caves and holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith. Yet none of them received what had been promised. God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. It talks about all these normal, regular people who had stepped out in faith and lived lives that were not what the world would call successful. They lived lives that would not necessarily be lives that we would aspire to. We would want our children to be. I look forward to the day when you can wander around the caves and wear sheepskin. Okay, that's not what we want for our children, but yet maybe it should be. Not specifically sheepskin, but living a life that's not based on what the world's standards are. But I got to thinking about my own life. I got to thinking about those people in my life who I think I could use as an example of a person who did this type of thing, who lived outside the box, who seemed like they always put God first, and they were so concerned with other people in their life. And there are several people that came to my mind, but the one specific person was my grandfather, Papa's dad, Doc. He didn't grow up a Christian. He grew up in a denomination. And at some point in his life, I don't even know when he became Christian, 20s, 30s, I don't really know, became a Christian. and looked around at the world he lived in the Carolinas, and said, you know what? There are not really any strong churches around here. There are not a lot of churches that are based on the Bible. And so he decided he was going to quit his job, and he was going to go back to college. He was in his 30s. In fact, I think he was in college with his own sons, right? Quit his job, had a good job, moved to Free Hardeman. That's probably the worst, that's probably the hardest part of the whole thing, living in Henderson. But
he was 50.
He was 50 when he did that. Decided he was going to be a preacher. Went to college, got a degree in preaching, went back to the Carolinas, and was a preacher for I don't know how many years. Then became, after that, retired from that, then became an elder, and was one of the most faithful elders that I've ever known. I never could go to his house when there wasn't someone there I didn't know. He and my grandmother always would take in strangers. Somebody needed a place to stay, people knew where to point him. He would stay at Dr. Beard's. They always took in strangers. They always wanted to help others. They got burned a bunch of times. He would, don't take them in, Doc and Beard. Don't take people into your home. And sometimes they got burned. But they were known because of their service that they rendered. They were known because of their love for other people. Now think about their attitude of just their own spiritual lives. You couldn't be around them very long before you weren't praying or studying. He was the person who reached out to other people and had just a gift. He wasn't a real eloquent speaker. But he had a gift of just telling people about Jesus in a way that people could understand, and people that were drawn to his message about Jesus. And when I say him, I mean my grandmother too. She was the same way. They raised sons. See, two of them became preachers. Kind of had a legacy of Christian faith. And I think about how different am I than he was? Well, I know I'm different because of him. But how different am I than he was? And if you looked at his life, if you looked at his life through God's eyes, and I know that's impossible, okay? What does God see when he sees a life like that? He wasn't a perfect guy. He had issues. And he definitely, you know, he had struggles or whatever. But the thing is, in his life, what I saw was a person who put God first. And then loved others as he loved himself. And isn't that the challenge? Isn't that really what we've been discussing? It all boils down to those two things. Love God with all your heart, mind, soul, strength. And love others as you love yourself. If we can do those two things, we're going to be successful as a Christian. We're going to be successful in God's eyes. If I can do those two things, just do those two things as if that's something easy to do. Maybe I've been looking at it in the wrong sort of way. Maybe I've been thinking about, you know, not all of us can move to Nigeria and start an orphanage. Not all of us can, you know, move to the center of nowhere and become a preacher or a missionary or whatever. But I know that I can do those two things. Those are the two things maybe that I need to strive for. That I need to strive for giving God all of me and then helping those around me the very best that I can. Seeing others in a different way. Trying to help those who are in need. But give up. Does anybody else have someone in their life that you don't even have to maybe tell who they are? Maybe somebody in your life that you'd like to share. Who has been an example to you of those two things? Derek?
My grandfather also, back when he came from Lawrenceburg, he started out going to a different type of church, and my grandmother was very helpful and got him going to Church Christ and was able to get him to pretty much think about life differently. And when they came here, they were going to Madison Church, And then they started doing a clothing room. And this was before the actual clothing room went nice. And they did it out of their house downstairs. And they had everybody coming in. And they would, you know, they always were open from like 7 in the morning to like however late they wanted to stay open with everybody coming in, get clothing. And then they started trying to do stuff like Meals on Wheels and, you know, giving it. And then eventually in the church at Madison started picking up and made a whole clothing room. And then my grandmother still worked through that when my grandfather would do Meals on Wheels. And it was just, you could tell that there was a very consistency with them that always seemed to flow, thinking about, you know, to help out others and to always do that. And they're always, you know, even today, my grandmother, and I make fun of her because I told her I could have gone to college off what she did, but she would take a penny that she found outside of the gas station, go back inside and say, "Someone lost this." And I'm like, "It's a penny." Mm-hmm. But that's just how she was. She always was willing to do that. And my grandfather was the same way. He, you know, he was a mechanic, so he would always be trying to help somebody out. And just, you know, like, he could tell that they didn't have money, and he was like, "Don't worry about it. You can just pay me back when you can." And, you know, he got burnt a lot too, but at the same time, he's got some of the best relationships out of stuff like that. And he, you know, he'll fix up a car and sell it to him exactly what it should be cost-wise. And, you know, and he's just, he's always wanting to do something for somebody else. I mean, he even helped me put up security doors the other day. And, you know, I can tell that he's getting older because he's getting more winded and wants to sit down a lot more. But, you know, it's just, that's just him. He's just always doing, no matter what shape he is, he just wants to be helping people. And he gets so much joy out of that. That's just, it's really opposite of what a lot of people show. Because people would be complaining probably about how hot it was downstairs or, you know, whatever it was. And, but he, on the other hand, he just doesn't complain. He just does. And that seems to give him the best joy ever. So I keep him busy.
Yeah, that's what you do.
Somebody for me, I think, well, not that I think, I know it would be Brandon. My brother, I mean, y'all know what kind of heart he has, and he is definitely a servant, and his desire is to help other people and to develop relationships with other people. He has no cares about worldly things. He could care less where he lives, what he drives, the things he owns, and does not matter to him. He is most concerned with the people that he comes in contact with, and, you know, the church family here, the kids that we pick up. And I mean, he does so many things for the kids that we'll never know about. You know, he's just, after work, that's what he does. And definitely an example to me of somebody who is very selfless. And I can say this right now because he's not in here. I would never say this in front of him. We'll be in your court. Maybe you won't listen.
But, you won't believe it. You won't believe it.
Yeah, just edit this part out.
Well, and I think as Chris is saying that, one of the things when he's talking about his brother, and somebody when you were talking about it that came to my mind was Bill Johnson. The sincerity that they have, you can see it through the people they come into contact with. You know, I remember going around with Bill because he would come pick me up and tell me we were going to do something, and you really did not know what you were going to be doing that day. You come into contact with people that, you know, if you just walked in and he was paying for his food or something like that, it was just the way he interacted with someone. They lit up. They could have been the grumpiest person the whole time. And then Bill comes into line. He just leans over and he kind of even, and that smile comes on. There's just something about the way in which they've lived their life in service and different things like that that people really are drawn to. You know, when Bill would come back from overseas and he would start showing pictures, you could tell he didn't know the language that he was speaking with them, but every picture he's got, and big grins on people's faces and different things like that. And so when you're talking about the examples, one of the things that I always look back to is how are the people that they come into contact with? You know, I just remember being 15, 16, 17, and then a little bit older with Bill, and just being amazed at how it just seemed like everybody he came into contact with, they left happier than what they were when they first met him, and what a special gift that was. But I also, from knowing him as I got older, I know how hard he worked at that as well.
Well, I would have to say my grandfather. I mean, he's been in the music business for 50 plus years, and he had to go through a lot too, but even still, he's remained faithful, and he continues to foster people and bring people in, and I don't know, like, people have given him a lot of grief in his life, but he's continued to remain faithful. And even the older he gets, he, like, the other day we were in Memphis, he was just telling me, he was like, this is not my work. My work is for the Lord. And he wants to get out of it so bad. So he's always put God first. He'll mention God up on stage. He doesn't even care. He'll talk about God in front of, you know, mixed crowds that might not even believe, but just whoever he comes in contact with, he always uses scripture, it seems. And so.
I call our grandfather the king of stuff, and it's not because he collects stuff for himself. He goes and gets stuff for other people. He'll just call me up. I got this 4 or 5 bags of clothes. You want these clothes? Or I got this bike, or I got this or that, and I'm going to drop it off down at the church. And so a lot of the stuff you see on the tables out there came from Brady. But he does really have a heart for other people. And the thing about these type of people is they're not in it for the accolades or for you to say anything about them. In fact, most of the time they're embarrassed if you say anything about them. Like Brandon would be very embarrassed if anybody said, you know, those things to his, you know, to his face. That's why I never try to compliment him. And also, they seemingly go unnoticed by the world. They seemingly go unnoticed by the world.
Hey, David.
Yeah.
Not always, though. I mean, if you think about just people that we would all know about, Tim Tebow. I mean, that's why is he constantly talked about? Because he's willing to do this. I mean, we may not agree with his faith, but I don't think there's any of us that can deny. He's outside the box. I mean, he doesn't care. He's gonna wear it on his sleeve, and you know, that I think is more important to him than his job too. I think it always has been. So some of these guys, and we read in Hebrews chapter 11, I mean, they didn't go unnoticed. Those guys were, because of what they were doing, everybody knew about them and ridiculed them. And the whole Chick-fil-A controversy we were talking about. Immediate ridicule when you're willing to step out. So, I mean, those of us who aren't otherwise successful, famous, whatever, yeah, I think you're probably right. We would go unnoticed, but you know, there are some that already have worldly success that are still willing to do that, and they get noticed immediately.
Right, I'll tell you. Tell you what I really meant by that, and you're right. There are some that are glaringly obvious, and we need a lot more Tim Tebows, right? I mean, people who are willing to stand up, who are famous. But at the time when we're doing those acts of service, when we're doing, it seems like nobody notices. Sometimes we get discouraged because it doesn't seem like that we're making any kind of difference. Doesn't seem like that really we're making any kind of impact as those things are going along. I'm just going through my daily, but we can go back and we can look back at the lives of these people, some of them who have gone on and some who haven't, but we can look back at them. It was noticed. You know, people saw their lives. The very simplistic servant life that they lived. People noticed.
Yeah, I think we need more of Paul's attitude too. I mean, what he told the Corinthians, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. I'm not here to get immediate gratification for what I did. I'm going to do what's right and let God deal with it. Because once I plant that seed, it may take years for that seed to take to really grow into what it needs to be. But my job is to plant the seed. It's not to make sure that seed grows and tend it and hold to that one seed and only that seed. If a farmer stood over every seed he planted, he couldn't be it all, can he? If you plant one seed and then make sure that seed grows, when that's all you have. That's why his attitude was, I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to put it out there, and God will give that increase. But too often we think we should be the one that does that. I'm disappointed because there wasn't a result. Well, there wasn't a result that I saw immediately. Doesn't mean there won't be one. And that the people we're talking about understood that. Mm-hmm. It's not about me. It's not about what I do. And I don't care if there is an immediate impact negatively when I do something, because I'm not doing it for me. And that's a difficult attitude for us to grasp. The concept that it's in God's hands and he's going to deal with it. And I don't have to.
Well, I think that's a great point. I think we all have different gifts and abilities. I don't have to force myself to be something I'm not in order to be a servant in God's kingdom. I don't have to force myself to be a preacher. I don't have to force myself to be a teacher. I don't have to force myself to be this or that. I think we need to challenge ourselves to do things. But how many seeds, how many people watering in each of our lives did it take for us to be where we are? I mean, I can think of a lot in my life who I was telling my Wednesday night class, my teenagers, about. I was going through the infamous junk drawer in my room. You know, everybody's got a drawer of junk, maybe more than one. I was going through and I was cleaning it out, and as I was cleaning it out, I found this note from a sweet lady at Rivergate when I decided to move here and we decided to start this work. And basically what she said was, I think what you're doing is great. I think that we need more people that are willing to do that. And whatever you do, God's going to bless. And it was just so encouraging. And so now I took that note, and of course I kept it, which means it meant something to me at the time. And now I have it in a place where I can look at it. When I get discouraged, I can look at that note, and I can see that what she said, I believe, has come to fruition, that things have gone well. We have been able to encourage a lot of kids. But how many of us does it take? How many different teachers saying stuff, and how many different encouragers does it take to get a kid from the time that he's 5 till the time that he's 18 and ready to go off on his own? It takes a lot. Got a call, and this happens all the time. Got a call yesterday from Nisha. And she's a girl that we hadn't seen probably in a year and a half. She came here faithfully for 2 years. Her brother Maurice got himself into some trouble, and Sean and I kind of went and visited him in jail and some stuff like that, and built a good relationship with their family. Their little boy's chili dog, her little nephew. Anyway, she called me yesterday, and she said, "Mr. Dave, do you know who this is?" I'm like, you know how many calls I get like that? I said, "Talk a little more. It's Nisha." She said, "Man, I ran into Jessica and Keelan at the football field. And we've moved back to Madison, and I want to come back to church. I miss it. I miss church." You know, I was just talking to somebody the other day about her. I think it might have been Jessica. Asking if she knew where she was. She's like, "No, I don't know. I don't know what happened to her." And totally lost contact. And what you think in the back of your mind is, "Oh, well, they're still around, but they just don't want to come to church anymore. You know, they've forgotten." But it's just not true. These kids move all over the Nashville area, and when they come back in an area where they know that we'll come pick them up, we get a call. And it's because people here, they care, and we show love and those sorts of things. But it's those moments that make up for all the ones that, you know, aren't so good, which there are a few. But I think maybe we just need to think about a little bit more about okay, God has put me here in this place, wherever I am, I'm in this place for a reason. The situation that I'm in this situation for a reason. I've got to make the best of it. I've got to do what I can do to love God and give my heart to Him, but also look around and to give my all to those around me. And I'm going to get burnt sometimes. I'm going to have some times where it's going to be discouraging, where I don't know what God is doing. I don't know what He's going to do. But those are the moments when I've got to have faith, when I've got to say, you know what, I've got to stay outside the box, not go running back for cover, not go running back for the middle ground, the safe ground, the comfort zone. I need to stay out here. And God will take care of me. God will help me. As long as I do what He wants me to do, He will provide. And I don't understand. I don't know how that's going to work out. I really don't. But I have to trust Him because He knows better. I'm going to close with this. One of the things that I've come to the conclusion with in my own life, because one of the things we have the most issue with, I think, is our personal possessions and money and those sorts of things. I was in a house this past week, and again, I'm not trying to be judgmental on anybody, because I don't know them. It was huge, okay? The house was huge. Their bonus room was bigger than, you know, my whole main floor. And I get to be in a few houses like that every now and then. And I just kept thinking to myself, what does a person do with all this? When is enough enough? When is enough stuff, enough house, enough car, enough bank account? When is enough enough? For us, never, right? As a society. Never is enough enough. I wonder if I could just live my life providing for my family and not thinking about all the extras, all the things that I can add to that, and just then use that whatever money's left over after I provide for my girls, which is not much at this point. But use that money for God, for service. And not think about all the extra stuff that I can get. Not think about all the new cars that I can buy. And I'm not, again, I'm not judging anybody else. I'm talking about myself. But God just wants us to live with what we live with. And He wants us then to be able to have the attitude that the other money that I have, the other time that I have, the other possessions that I have, they're not mine, they're His. After I provide for my family, then I can think about those that are around me and not, I'm going to be all, it's not hoarder necessarily, but when is enough enough? And that's the question for me. When is it enough? And I need to figure that out. And I need to say that, you know, I need to live on what God provides. And then I need to be willing then to give the extra. That's just one of the things that I've been thinking about in my trying to make application of this stuff that we've been studying, actually make some real life daily application of this stuff instead of just, oh yeah, that's really great. That's really great material. And really try to make a change in my thinking, a change in the way that I do things. And I hope that through this process you're doing the same thing in your own life, because it's going to affect all of us differently. It's going to be different for all of us. And so I hope that as we're going through this, that's something that we'll focus on. Any comments, questions? Okay. We're good. Song service will start promptly in 7 minutes.